Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 7th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I don't know about you, but this week flew by for me. It seems like we just did the show, and I'm not being funny. I mean, it was as fast as I think it's been between shows for me. I don't know what happened this week, but man.
You know, it did kind of seem that way to me, too. I was like, you know, I got a head start on the file this week, and then I'm like, last night I was going to bed, and I'm like, oh, man, got a show to do in the morning.
I can't believe it. I keep thinking it's like Wednesday or Tuesday. I'm like, we're doing the show today. It's Thursday, and we're doing it for Friday. It's crazy how fast it went by. I mean, I don't know what's going on. I guess we're just busy with the magazine, and you're busy with the World Championship and stuff, and just, you know, when you're busy, you know, the whole theory of relativity thing going there. But, yeah, it's good to have you back, buddy. How's it going?
Wow, you worked Einstein into our podcast.
I try. I do what I can.
No, things actually have been moving, flying by for me because I'm just having a blast out here at Thunder Valley, you know, resort like I always do. The World Championships are going fantastic. So nice to see all the friends we made, you know, over the last couple of years being out here, come out and having a good time. And great participation. Our event six, keeping up our trend. We set the field, the largest field in Thunder Valley history, 994 players.
Oh.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, that's huge. Almost 1,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, like typical poker players, everybody shows up on the last four-day ones, and they were at capacity with alternates, and I don't know how many people got turned away. I don't think very many, but had those people came on any of the other three flights, we would have easily hit 1,000. So,
But...
Not bad, 60,000 on top for a 425 buy-in tournament. That's a pretty good day at the office.
Wow.
But all the tournaments have been doing quite well, except for our Annie only, unfortunately. You know, I love when these rooms put themselves out there and try something different and mix it up a little bit. And they've done the Annie only here a couple times, and I think I chopped it 1 year. This year, though, only 25 players, which was too bad, and I was out really quickly.
Oh.
Unfortunately, as I was in the horse tournament, out really quickly. So the two tournaments that I've done really well in over here, over the years, out early.
Oh, man.
But meanwhile, I got a chop in a no-limit hold'em event, so go figure.
Well, that's good, though. I mean, you're pretty much on par for what you normally do, though. You usually score pretty decent on one event or two events, and then you might do bad in others, but you always seem to come out pretty decent in these, especially at Thunder Valley. You do well there.
Yeah, so actually right now I'm free-rolling for the rest of the week. I've only got I played a no-limit event last night that I wasn't scheduled to because the horse – I wasn't scheduled to be knocked out of the horse event anyway, as early as I was. And I went really deep in the no-limit last night too. Unfortunately, I got knocked out for the money, but – So I've got left today. We're doing the Heads Up event here. Starts in a couple hours, which I'm very excited about. And then tomorrow night, of course, the Open Face Chinese, my other favorite event. And depending on how the Heads Up goes today, I hope it goes really well.
Awesome,
if not, then I'll be playing PLO and dipping into the wall.
No, we want a free roll here. We want a free roll. So let's do well
exactly.
Today in the Heads Up.
Yeah, I was just thinking last night, man, boy, if I could just get a min cash and there's no limit. I mean, how crazy would that be? But the one I chopped in was the escalator event. And I don't know if we talked about this last year. They did this at least last year, if not the last couple of years out here. It's not a drastically different event, but it's kind of new or kind of different. So the limits start out at 10 minutes, I think. But every time they go up, they add 2 minutes to it.
Oh.
So the, by the time we chopped, it was like at 38 minutes per level. And it would have maxed out at 60 had we gone on forever.
Cool.
But that's kind of cool because, you know, one of the things that that players talk about all the time is that the early rounds really don't mean much and that they need more time to play when it actually means something later in the tournament, right? So this is a format that kind of ensures that's going to happen. Obviously, it's a little quicker at the beginning than players would like, but it's pretty neat.
That is pretty cool. And it just the longer you play, the longer you play. That's kind of cool.
I'm gonna put that on a T-shirt.
The longer you play, the longer you play.
Was that an impression of me? Because I don't sound anything like that.
No, that's kind of how my ears hear you when you make wonderful statements like that.
Very nice.
Oh man, and then also I actually satellited into that 425 event with 994 players. I thought that might be a good payday for me, which was a nice satellite to get in, right? And I got to ask you this, Chris. How many tournaments in your life have you been knocked out on when somebody has flopped quads on you?
Probably zero.
Probably zero, right? Yeah. Pretty rare, right? They have
yeah.
somebody flopped quads on you?
Yeah.
How rare is it when somebody flops quads on you and you're still alive?
Oh, no way.
Isn't that awesome? I had pocket jacks, I raised it pre-flop, and the flop came 9-9 whatever, and we all got it in. He turns to our pocket nines, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then I'm like, hey, I'm still alive.
That's right, runner jack, baby.
Of course, I didn't even get a weak, feeble jack to attempt to run at one of those two spots, but I got knocked out. But, you know, because you know, you're never happy when you get knocked out of a tournament, right? But you always like to have a story, and not one of these terrible bad beat stories that I've heard all week. Guys walk up to buddies, oh man, you can't believe this, man! How could he call that? That
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, I think losing the flop quads and being live was a great story. I've been telling that story all week, and people love it.
Oh, jeez. People love it. No, they see here comes the Antia publisher. Be nice to him.
No, because it sounds like a typical bad beat story. Oh my god, man, he flopped quads. Can you believe that? And then you go, but I'm live, and they start laughing, and they're like, oh, wait a minute. You're right, you were.
Now, did they have a bad beat there at Thunder Valley that maybe you could have a tournament bad beat that maybe you could have split there if you did go jack-jack?
Yeah, no, that would have been nice. And I did have quads in a cash game, too, but didn't get anything for it either. So, but I did win the pot, which is important, though.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Always people are like, hey, you know, did you win the pot? Yeah, well.
They quit your pitching.
So one more funny story before we move on to the rest of the show. But, you know, so when I travel now, one of my new things to do is to get a soccer jersey from every country that I go to.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah, so I've got like Honduras and Netherlands and Germany and, you know, wherever else I've been. And so I was recently up in Canada, right, our neighbors to the north, with the very friendly border guards. And I picked up a Canada soccer jersey, really nice, I liked it, and I haven't had a chance to wear it yet, and I wore it during a tournament here. And people actually believed I was from Canada.
Is that because every time somebody do something stupid at the table, you go, hey?
Yeah, you know, I was like, maybe I'm giving off that vibe. Because, you know, like, hey, I wore my Whitesnake t-shirt a couple days ago. Doesn't mean I'm in Whitesnake, right? So why do people automatically believe I'm from Canada? But they really believed it. So, you know, at one point the guy was like, I took a big pot off of me. He's like, oh, you Canadians, we let you in the country, you take our chips. And then they just kind of giggled and laughed, all right, whatever. Yeah, I'm like, he's not serious. And then the rest, three or four other people at the table started ganging up on me. Oh, there's Canada again. Have a good tournament, eh? And I really honestly believe they thought I was from Canada, and I let them believe it. It was kind of funny. So, but I just wanted to let our friends up north know that I represented you and sort of well.
You know, it's funny. It's funny you should say that. I recently went down to the Dali Museum exhibit because the Da Vinci thing was there. And
yeah.
I wore my Italia shirt that I got when I was in Italy. You know, it's the color, the team colors of the soccer team. It's like,
right.
you know, it was blue with the. So I didn't even remember that I had it on when I'm walking around the exhibit. But they had some guy there. He had to be like one of the security people there, or whatever, for the Da Vinci stuff, or whatever.
So he walks by me and he's like, "Buongiorno." And it caught me totally off guard. And I was like, "Oh, hey, what's going on?" And I could have totally answered him in Italian and I didn't because I forgot I had the shirt on. You know what I mean? But it sometimes people see that. They see their colors and they think, "Oh, you might be Italian," or in your case, you know, "Oh, you must be Canadian," or so. I believe it. I think that's although the big shocking thing to me was I didn't know Canada had a soccer team.
No, they just hosted the World Cup.
I know. It's just the weirdest thing. I don't equate Canada with soccer at all.
I guess technically I could have called it a Canadian curling jersey.
Does it have the big maple leaf on it? Is it really big and prominent? Or
Yeah. Actually, it's got little tiny maple leaves down each sleeve, too. It's actually pretty nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I believe it, though. I don't think you're lying at all.
Yeah. I'll buy it.
Yeah.
All right, a little news here. Mohegan Sun, which runs casinos in Connecticut and Pennsylvania, has taken over management of Resorts Casino in Atlantic City and has now entered the New Jersey online market as well. So a little more competition there for our friends in New Jersey that like to play.
What, you know, what's the deal with resorts? It's like they get passed around a lot. Like, are they the wimp of the strip or something?
A couple other ones have got passed around a lot more out there. I think the Rebels on is like a fourth or fifth owner in Atlantic clubs too. But yeah, it's like a three card Monte. All of Atlantic City is three card Monte.
Yeah. Because the Poker Stars had resorts for a while lined up. That was going to be a big thing, and then that got shut down real quick, and
yeah, that didn't happen. Yeah.
Well, is there any? I didn't read the story completely. Mohegan Sun going to name it Mohegan Sun, or are they just going to keep it Resorts?
I think they're just managing it. So they can have a presence there and actually be in the online. But I could be wrong. I don't actually think the story actually said that or not.
Because if you change it to Mohegan Sun, you might actually have a chance of surviving. You know,
I think that's true.
That branding is pretty huge.
I would think they would also want to do a complete makeover of the place if they're going to put the Mohegan Sun name on it.
That is true.
Mohegan Suns are very nice, both of the ones. Actually, I haven't been to the one in Connecticut, so I can't say. But it looks right in the pictures.
Oh, the one in Connecticut's gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly, right? So you don't want to put a Mohegan Sun on in dirty Atlantic City without making it Mohegan Sun-ish.
We had the buffet at Resorts. I remember that. It was very unimpressive.
Yeah, actually, I've been to that buffet twice. And the first time I went was when the casinos were on strike.
Ooh.
And we didn't realize it when Laura and I got to town. And when casinos were on strike, service, not so good.
Shocking.
Because they had all the managers that had been bossing around the workers all the time, actually, bussing your table and bringing out the yellow or whatever it is they're reading that day on the buffet. And not so good. Not so good. All right, and then I got amped up for the podcast this morning by waking up early and catching up on Big Brother, which you can watch online after it airs. And we talked about at the beginning of the summer that Vanessa Russo was chosen to be on, as well as this other poker dealer, Devon.
Mm-hmm.
Devon did not last very long at all. She was like the second one knocked out. And never, as far as we could tell, told anybody that she knew who Vanessa was.
Oh.
Because at the beginning we were thinking, oh, there's no way this poker dealer is not going to recognize Vanessa and she's going to totally sell her out, right? Didn't. And I think I read in a story afterwards that part of it was because this Devon lady never told anybody she was a poker dealer. She told everybody she was a teacher.
So she couldn't do it then. Unless she said,
having her own game blown up, right?
Yeah.
This is the problem with Big Brother. People always think they're smarter than anybody else and they screw themselves. I also mentioned that I was really excited to watch Vanessa play because I, want to see the game theory and how she plays. And she has been putting on a clinic this summer, Chris. I don't know if you're watching. I don't think you are probably right.
No, I don't watch that show, but I do see the commercials.
Probably all the time. When you got a show on 3 hours every week during the summer, you got to promote the heck out of it.
That's right.
She's really putting on a clinic. She's doing really well. Definitely has got to be one of the favorites to win here. And she had a huge move last week that unfortunately was almost like getting rivered with a two-outer. She had it set up beautifully, and then the absolute one thing that could go wrong did go wrong. But she's more or less survived it, and I think she's going to do quite well. So it's been fun to watch her.
That's cool, and we sort of mentioned it in before, so we put it in our magazine this month. So I'm like, please survive long enough so people can see her on the show and in the magazine at the same time, and don't think that we're just that far away. So I was so happy to see she was doing well, and But she's still around, right? Even though that play didn't work, she's still around. So that's good.
Yeah, and she'll be around for the issue to come out because the next eviction is tomorrow and she is not up for eviction. So
sweet.
So the soonest she could get knocked out would be a week from tomorrow. So.
And of course, the issue's online ready for everybody to read if they want to read it. So
exactly.
Okay, so any updates? Our most popular dealer contest is now in its final stage. Vote for Leslie Messmer, Emily Clemens, Brittany Thomas, Barbara Jones, or Miranda Miller at AnnieUpMagazine.com/MPD. You can vote once for each social network account you have, Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. You know what I like about all of our dealers? These ladies all have easily pronounceable names. It's almost as if we made it a prerequisite. I mean, these are nice names. Thomas, nice Jones, name. Miller, Clemens, Messmer. I mean, this is stuff that Scott Long can handle when he has to speak about them publicly.
But yeah, you put no trust in me to actually say those names. So
no, I read it for you, but I proofed it. So that way I gave you for next week, you can say their name again now that I've done it for you once. But no, really, I mean, nice, wholesome names there. It's something that you know, a lot of times I can't pronounce people's names. I'm sure I'll murder someone's name later on in the show. All right, so while our focus
has been really good too.
While our focus is on the World Championship right now, mark your calendars for our next two events. Dover Downs in Delaware will host our first Annie Up Set Sail Series September 3rd to the 7th, and then the Annie Up Poker Tour Championship event will be at Pearl River Resort in Mississippi October 1st to the 12th. Details on all Annie Up Poker Tour events can be found at AnnieUpPokerTour.com.
And just to announce, too, we've decided to put the winner of the main event of the Dover Downs Delaware Poker Championship, that September event, on the cover of the magazine, which is kind of a rare honor for our Set Sail series. So, you know, if you're anywhere near the Mid-Atlantic, you want to get over there and play that event on Labor Day, and maybe you'll be on the cover of the magazine.
Absolutely. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. Comes from Matt Bodorf. Says, recently at a local poker room, they basically told me they don't allow any table talk. Is this for real? I believe turning poker into a silent sport just kills the game. If you can't say a word to anyone, even if heads up, then what will keep me from everyone else from just sitting at home once online poker comes back? Part of playing live is a social interaction and banter. If a player doesn't want to talk back, that should be their decision. But I shouldn't be punished or scolded by a dealer or floor for talking to my opponent at the table. Do you think places that ban all talking have gone too far? And what are they trying to do?
Wow. I don't know how to answer this.
To me, it's insane. I don't... what's the point?
Yeah, I will say this. I'm not a big fan of table talk. I really hate when people talk at the table anyhow. I mean, when we're talking about in the middle of a hand, you know, when I just put you all in and then you're like, got the jack? Could you really have called with 9-10? Set of queens? And I'm like, dude, just make a decision. So I'm not a big fan of it. So it's one of those things where... yeah, I think probably banning it seems to go a little too far, but personally, I don't really care. I mean, I enjoy it better when I don't have some, you know, punk trying to talk me down from something like that. But that's just personal. I think Matt, he's one of our good friends out here at Thunder Valley, too. I've seen him a bunch this week. So, I mean, obviously he likes to talk at the table, and I know he doesn't do it rudely. I think that's probably where part of this comes from, is that, you know, sometimes people take this too far, right? And so it's more like protecting players so they're not feeling bullied at the table. That's part of it, I guess, maybe. And the other thing, too, is, you know, we always talk about, you know, you're not allowed to disclose the contents of your hand. Now, obviously, people say, you know, once you're all in and there's no more action and you're the last one, then why does it matter, you know, whether you're telling anyone or showing anyone? But I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of it. So this is not one of those things that I'm going to pick up the flag and lead the charge with Matt on.
I just want to make sure it is during a hand that he means and not just sitting there at a table and you can't say anything at all. Yeah, no,
I guess that's the flip side of it, too, is, you know, and this is kind of what we're talking about with the first card off the deck thing last time, right, too? People were like, you know, you know, I love Matt, but it's not going to kill the game. It's not turning into a silent sport. It's just turning into a silent sport when you're in the middle hand, supposed to be focusing on the cards.
Right.
As soon as you make that call or fold or whatever, then you go like, hey, did you have it? Oh, hey, what's your favorite color? Purple? Perfect. Yeah, great. You know, whatever it is you want to talk about. So there's plenty of socialization going on now, even if you can't talk in the hand. And, you know, it's been really chatty room here this last week out here, people talking, having a good time. So, you know, I think that's probably taking it too far to say that it's killing all the social interaction and you'd rather just be at home online where you can't talk at all to anyone ever. But I guess I do get it why people have trouble understanding why they can't talk about their hand when, particularly when their head's up and action.
Yeah. If it's during a hand, I don't really mind it being banned. But at the same time, a lot of people rely on that. They're trying to get information on you. It's an information game and complete. If I have to just strictly go by the twitch in your eye or the amount you bet, it might be more fun to just get somebody to talk. And sometimes they talk to me, it's good too, because then I can get them to call when I don't want, you know what I mean? So I don't really like the ban on it, but I don't really care during hands. If they make it quiet, that's fine, whatever. It's their thing.
Let me ask you this, Chris. Do you ever talk back to someone when they're talking to you?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. See, I never do. So, I mean, I think I just kind of like kill this whole thing for Matt anyhow. When he's talking to me, I'm just putting my head down. I'm sitting there. You can jabber all you want, and you're not going to get a thing out of me because I'm just not going to play your game. So,
in the home game, I'm comfortable talking back.
Well, that's different because of the home game where I'm playing. Yeah. But I'm in a casino, and you're trying to get a read on me. I'm not going to give you any opportunity to get a read on me. I'm not going to talk back to you. I'm going to sit there and be a statue. And
you're going to take your ball and go, aren't you?
Yeah. No. So, I mean, that's like an organic way of killing this thing, right? You know, rather than the room having to ban it, is just have players just not talk back, not look at you, not do anything, just wait for you to make a decision, and then we don't have to worry about it. But
yeah, as long as it's during the hand, then I can sort of see it. But if they're talking about just like, hey, be quiet at the table the whole time, then that's kind of
it's not a library.
That's what I'm saying. It's just crazy. Imagine just walking into a poker room and there's no noise except chips ruffling. That would be hilarious.
Now, that being said, I think all those players that are reasonably quiet at the table should be given a muzzle when we come into the poker room, and we get to put that muzzle on one person, because there's always one guy at the table that you just want to shut the F up. Non-stop talking. Shut up.
You know, you can call a clock on people. You should be able to, you know, call a muzzle on people.
Yes, there you go. That'd be awesome.
That'd be awesome. Muzzle, table six. Hey, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Snow call me, Casino Director of Poker Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgrade membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Antiup group discussions. Comes from Brian McKean. He says, I was in a new 4-8 game at a casino with an automatic shuffler. The dealer spreads one deck, washes it, and places it in the shuffler. The second deck is spread, washed, and hand-shuffled. The hand is dealt out, and I'm dealt ace-king, and I play the hand to the end against one opponent and lose. The deck is washed and placed in the shuffler, and the next hand is dealt. The shuffler stops and shows an error of 51 cards. The dealer looks and finds that the ace of clubs was in her tray. The card was added to the deck, and the game went on. I called the floor, explaining that that card was a critical card, and if it had been in the deck, I could have won the hand, as I was only beat by a pair. The floor ruled the pot remained to my opponent. I don't feel that I should have won the pot, but I think all money should have been returned and the game should have been restarted with two complete decks. What is the proper ruling?
Elliot says, generally, the rare cases that the action is unraveled and the money's return are when the hand is not yet complete and the deck of cards in play has proven itself to be fouled. The splitting of the deck is not just for show. It is done for the benefit of all players in the casino to prove that all cards are there and only the required 52 cards are there. Also, just because there were 51 cards in the shuffler does not mean that the hand you played had a 51-card deck in play. As the dealer gathered the cards to place in the shuffler, a card might have slipped into the tray. Also, it would have been the only card in the dealer tray as the other deck was in the shuffler. In this situation, the supervisor made the right call.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. We put this one in the magazine, this issue, and when I read it, I thought, before I got to Elliot's answer, I thought, yeah, what What are they going to do? But it totally makes sense. First of all, you don't know if that ace wasn't in the deck. Second of all, if the ace was in the deck, you might not have got ace-king. So you can't play it that way, saying, well, I had ace-king, that ace would have made a difference. Well, you might not have gotten ace-king if the ace was in the deck. So,
True. You know,
there's a lot of things here that contribute to it, and I think the floor really did make the right call. It's just bad that it happened to one of our listeners, and he had to suffer through that thought process. But really, when you think about it, it really is fair to say, sorry, we just have to move on.
I suppose it's possible, but I'm also having trouble believing that we don't know how many people at this table. It's a 4A game, so I'm going to assume it was a full 9 people, 10 people, right?
Right.
I really have a trouble believing that 10, 11 people counting the dealer didn't notice a card in the tray.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole time while they were playing a hand.
You know, maybe if it slides under the rail or something like that, that's a different story. But, you know, I mean, how much time is your eyes trained on the dealer in game and sometimes in the tray? And you want to say, hey, what about that card there?
Yeah.
There. But I don't know how. Obviously, it must have been just one hand because they're using an automatic shuffler. So maybe it wasn't there very long. But I think that's interesting that no one noticed that card, too.
Yeah, which is why it could have been exactly what Elliot said, that when the hand was over, she was putting the cards into the, you know, into the shuffler. It did pop out at that moment, which is only a couple of seconds later. And that's why it was in her tray, and that it wasn't in her tray that whole time. So you're right. I think that's it seems unlikely, but either way, the four really did have to make that ruling, because it's just not right to not make that ruling. Because at that point, how do you know you're not just holding an extra card in your hand just to, because you might lose this pot, you know, or something, and say, oh, look, there's a card here under the rail or something, you know.
Give me my money back. Thank you.
Hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing $2, $5 Nolem and Hold'em in a casino setting. We are familiar to the room and know a couple of people at the table. We've been playing even-keeled all night and have only made about $15 so far. We sit with 5-15, and the table is 9-handed. We're about 4 hours into the session. The blinds post, the under-the-gun raises to 25, an MP calls, and we're on the cutoff with the 9 of spades, 8 of spades. We make the call, as does the button. The blinds fold. With 4 of us going to a flop and $100 already in the pot, we see a beauty. The queen of spades, jack of diamonds, 10 of hearts comes down. Perfect. Exactly what we wanted with this hand, a flop straight. The under-the-gun and pre-flop aggressor leads out for $50, exactly half the pot. The MP folds, and with the ignorant end of a flop straight, we're not going to get too cute with this. We double the bet to 100. The button thinks only for a short amount of time before putting in 250. He started the hand with 600 and has played tight poker all night while mixing up his game with aggressiveness and passivity. The under-the-gun shoves for his remaining $800. This player has been a bit of a lag, but seems to know when to make the proper moves. He's also flipped over 2 stone-cold bluffs while raking in pots. So, can we fold this made hand here? Is that the proper play? Or are we good? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. Oh, boy, wow.
Wow. Brilliant. Don't send it there. We'll never get it there.
Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. Woo.
Ah. Okay, we might get those hands now.
I had nothing to drink last night either.
Wow.
This week's hand comes from David Bloomberg. Haven't heard from him in about 3 weeks, but he says, he's in his regular 1-2 game that he plays at Card Room with a couple tighter players, but often a lot of loose crazy ones, and he underlined a lot.
Okay.
You know, with his computer.
Right. So I'm on the lookout for loose crazy people right now.
Loose crazy people, right?
All
right. It's fairly early in the night, so I have about $200, which is the initial buy-in, and I get 2 red queens in middle position with 1 limper to me.
All right, so I'd race about 10 or 12 probably. Something like that. Generally, when we're in our 1-2 or 1-3 game, we make it, you know, at like the cruise ship or locally here, it's usually about $10 normally. So with the limper, maybe 12-ish, 12, something like that.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Dave says his usual raise around here ranges from 11 to 16 bucks, depending on who is before or after me in my position. But I haven't established a, quote, regular raise for the night yet.
Okay.
I'm going to pause and say this is why I keep my bets pretty standard. Is now you're talking about before or after me in my position. That makes it a little bit easier for people to figure out what you're doing if they're paying attention, which they usually don't on the 1-2, so it's probably not that big a deal.
Right, but, right.
That's why I'm going to keep my stuff. I don't factor that stuff in. You know, I'm going to do my normal 2.5x in a tournament or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. All right. So we.
I was just going to say I'm not smart enough to do 2.5. I have to only multiply by 3. I can't figure out 2.5 in my head. So you're way smarter than me, I guess.
Well, you just do 3 and shave a little bit off.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds right.
All right, David decides to make a 12 bucks, which is pretty common for him, he says. The small blind, who started the hand with 166 clams, plays very wild and often goes up against me and other tight players just to suck out. He looks at his card. I'm pretty sure it's more than just to suck out. He's trying to, you know, win money from you. But he looks at his cards and calls while telling the dealer that he won't blame him if this hand doesn't come in. And he says that's because the small blind also tends to get mad at dealers if he's losing. Because, you know, it's obviously the dealer.
Yeah, problem. Of course. They're setting it up to make you fail.
Exactly, right, yeah. The big who started the hand with roughly the same 200 bucks as us raises 10 more to 22. He's been re-raising like that a few times tonight but never showed anything huge. It's kind of a weird strategy that I haven't quite figured out yet. Here's the thing. It's pretty hard to figure out a 1-2 game anyhow. Get too many weird people there. I wouldn't spend a lot of time trying to figure out people at a 1-2 game.
I might re-raise, though.
Oh, absolutely now, right? If this guy's been doing this all night and hasn't really shown anything huge, all right. You know, because I don't want to be... I don't want more than one opponent in this hand, right?
Yeah, put the hammer down.
Yep. All right, I guess there's supposed to be somebody in between, but he doesn't mention it, so it gets to us, and we call the re-raise, because he's a, as he said previously, you haven't really figured out the big blind yet.
Yeesh.
Leaves an extra player in, or two, depending on how it comes out.
Well, not just that, but then he even said that he'd been doing it a few times during the night. I actually have not figured him out yet. I mean, I guess, you know...
Well, I'm sure he can't figure out when or why he's doing it.
But, yeah, so he hasn't shown down a lot of these hands then either.
Right.
Yeah, I'm 3. I'm betting again. I'm 4 betting, whatever you want to call it. Because it's... I want to make sure I'm up against someone and I'm in position with them, with the queen, so...
All right, well, the flop is the 9 of hearts, 6 of hearts, 4 of clubs, and it checks to us.
All right, well... I guess a pot's about, let's see, 22. So it's about 60-something if it's 3 players. It's 80-something if it's 4. I don't know how many people are in the pot.
Yeah, I think
so.
It's 6 players now. So apparently that limper...
got out of the way. Okay. All right, so I'll probably bet close to 3/4 of this pot. And just because it's, even though they are in the blinds, and you said earlier that a lot of these guys are crazy loose, and... another guy likes to just call, suck out and stuff. So there might be some really crazy combinations out there right now, and maybe even baby cards. So I really want to make sure that these guys are going to pay the draw. There's a couple of hearts you said, right? 9 of hearts?
Yep, 2 hearts.
So I probably bet like 40 bucks here.
Perfect. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Cool.
No fun.
Sorry.
All right, so this looks to be a decent flop for my queen, so I bet 30, about half the pot once the rake is taken.
Okay, that's okay. It's
quarter, but I think 40 is a little bit more.
Yeah, 40 is probably about right.
It says the crazy small blind calls, the confusing big blind folds. All right, so we're heads up with just a small blind now. And the turn is the 10 of spades. So our board now is 9 of hearts, 6 of hearts, 4 of clubs, 10 of spades, and the small blind checks.
Yeah, I'd probably just put the hammer down now and put it in. I don't want this guy... sucking out on me. Why is he just calling? Because if he had a good hand or a hand that was vulnerable, he might have re-raised us. Just calling out of the blinds. Maybe he's got something weird like 2 pair, but it could be 2 hearts. And I'm just probably going to put the hammer down here and make this guy pay. So I'm gonna either gonna shove or I mean, it's what 100 and something in the pot, right?
About 120 in the pot.
Right? Yeah, and we've got.
Well, and we started 200 and we put
30 and 20, 55. So we only have like 150 left. So
right.
Even if I wanted to bet 60, that's you know, I don't know, a little less than half my. So I don't know. I'd probably just put it all in.
Yeah, I think so. You know, because maybe at this point, maybe I'm putting 80, 90 in. If you put 90 in, you know, what are you going to do if you shove over the top? You're not
going to fold, right? 60, you're going to fold, so you're not going to fold for 60 bucks, so might as well just shove it all in there. So I'm not checking here, right? There's no, I guess we should explore that. I don't see how I could possibly check the turn now.
Yeah, with this kind of board, I mean, if I get a set at this point, you know, I'm not going to take the chance that. I mean, I normally a good player here would check behind if they didn't have anything, or on a flush draw. So I'm not going to give them that chance. So I'm definitely going to bet here if I have a set, which is really what all I can imagine we're scared of. I can't imagine a two pair with a $22 bet.
Maybe 7-8 suited or something might be. Because they said these guys are crazy, and that would be a straight. We'd be drawn dead, but. Yeah, there's no way I'm not betting, and the amount I need to bet for a worthy bet is going to be enough that I'd have to call if he shoves anyway, so I might as well just shove it.
Right. All right, our hero bets 40.
Well, that's not a lot. If he's drawn, he's not going to fold.
Yeah, that's a perfect price for a drawing hand now.
Yeah.
And the small blind calls, and our hero puts him on hearts, and I would definitely say he's probably drawing, you know.
So you put him on hearts after the call, right?
That's what he says. Yep.
Yeah. So if you're thinking ahead, like you should be, maybe you think that are hearts a possibility. If they are, I need to bet an amount that, you know, if you thought it might have been a possibility, and now after your $40 bet, which was pretty paltry, he's going to be like, you know, there's no way he's folding. And now you're going to think, oh, that's right, he could have hearts. You know, I mean, now I think he has hearts because he made my call. Well, now you got to be like, well, I should have bet more. So you got to take this as a learning thing. If the possibility's there, then you got to bet for that possibility, not wait to see if they call and say it's a possibility.
Right.
That's how you range it. So I think that's too small of a bet. It's only $10 more than the last bet, and there's $60 more in the pot. So you need to bet more than that.
All right. The river is the ace of hearts. So our final board is 9 of hearts, 6 of hearts, 4 of clubs, 10 of spades, ace of hearts, which is all kinds of suck there.
Yeah.
Hearts get there and ace gets there. All possibilities. And small blind shows for 74.
I get a fold. I mean, that's terrible. First of all, if we put him on hearts, we got to go with our read. Second of all, it's an ace. So he could have totally been sticking around with like ace 9, you know, and had ace of hearts in his hand, ace 9 is something. Because, first of all, they said loose crazy players. If he decides to call at ace 9 and, you know, he's got, it could be ace of hearts, whatever, that doesn't matter, but it was ace of hearts that came on the river. So it could have been any ace 9. It could have been a suited ace 9. I mean, if you're betting, you know, top pair, top kicker there, or calling with it, you know, there's no reason why he might think you have a 10 in your hand on the turn. So he could still be calling that 40s, not that much. So he could have had ace anyway in his hand. But you also put him on hearts. So although I know 74 is not a huge bet and you're probably getting a decent amount on your money, you're beat by an ace, you're beat by 7-8, you're beat by two pair, you're beat by hearts. You know, you didn't bet enough on that turn to really define his hand. So I think we have to fold.
Yeah, I think this is the advantage to have only bet as little as we did, is that we can get away from this. You know, I totally thought we should have shoved on the turn, and then it wouldn't have been a problem. But since we only bet 40, you know, now we can get away from it if we want. And I think there's just a whole lot of trouble out here now.
Yeah, because now you've got still got a decent amount of money in front of you that you can get away from it. Earlier, if you make a bet and then he shoves, you can't get away from it. But now you can, and you're beat so many ways now with that ace. If it had been like a black, you know, deuce or something, you know, then you're like, okay, you know, this guy's got a weird random two pair, you know, all the power to him, but yeah, I'm not getting beat by hearts, and I'm not getting beat by, you know, I mean, a set seems unlikely too, because you think he would have bet his hand somewhere along the line there to protect it, especially with all these connectors now. And he didn't. So it feels like it's hearts to me. It really does. It's terrible that this guy wakes up in the blind with two hearts and makes the flush on you, but that's what it feels like.
Well, and also remember, we're in a 1-2 game, and I hate to pick on 1-2 too much, but it is. It's the bottom feeder. It's the lowest no-limit game you can find in a casino, right?
Right.
So, you know, people have a wide range of skill sets here, too. It is entirely plausible that this guy just had a naked ace the entire way.
Yeah.
You know, ace queen, ace jack, ace 10. Well, I mean, that wouldn't have been naked on the turn, but, you know, ace. So, I mean, any ace is a real possibility here in addition to the hearts. Straight's probably less likely, but, there's just a whole lot of trouble here now that I think we could have taken care of by shoving. Maybe I was wrong. But
so we're both folding here, huh?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's terrible.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
All right, well, here it says, I think about how I put him on hearts, but what if he was calling with the intent of bluffing a heart? Certainly possible. But what if he was calling with the intent of catching an ace?
Yeah.
I think I didn't think and think and eventually convinced myself that he was indeed waiting to bluff a heart, so I call. He shows deuce of hearts, tray of hearts, and I vomit all over the table.
One thing before we move on, because he says calling with the intent of bluffing a heart. Well, I mean, okay, that's a huge risk. At least if you're in position, then when the guy checks to you, then it's like, okay, I floated you. But it's hard to float out of position and hope that the heart comes. And how do you know the other guy doesn't have the heart too, and he's betting the hearts the whole way? It's
well,
one
I
thing to
say-
check it to you.
It's less likely that we, as a hero, had hearts here because we were active the entire way. So,
you and I play differently. That's why, though. I would bet my hearts. That's the thing.
Absolutely. I think that's a good play, but I think that's also that's us having 10, 15 years of experience playing versus you know the normal 1-2 players that would not do that. So I think it's safe to say that we didn't have the hearts, and then I don't think the bluff is a bad move. Because then somebody has to figure out whether you actually stuck around with hearts. And the way this hand came down, it certainly looks like we did have hearts, which we did. Now, obviously, I would have lost my entire house betting against deuce of hearts, tray of hearts here.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But certainly hearts made sense there, and it did make sense for us. And so even if he didn't have a heart, it made sense to bet it. It came. And so our hero says, actually, I was kicking myself because I massively overthought the river, attributing too much thought to him. I should have known that he's not the type of player to think so far ahead in order to float and bluff the river that way. Yes, he made a crazy bad call pre-flop and probably shouldn't have continued along the way, and my $40 turn bet was probably too small. But it really wouldn't have mattered with him, but he got there.
So I pre-flop is where you get rid of the 2-2-3 or deuce tray. I mean, that to me, that because you're kind of confused what the big blind means, you have queens. Doesn't matter what he has.
That's true, yeah. If you would have bet raised to 50 or something there, it would be really hard for the deuce tray to call.
Yeah,
right?
Deuce tray's not coming around if you make it 66 to go.
And I'll say this, too, because he talked about how the $40 turn bet was probably small, but it wouldn't have mattered. That might be the case, but I would feel a whole lot better had I shoved and the guy turned over deuce tray. You know, even though I lost a pot, I mean, that just shows how bad of a play you made. You can't say he made a bad play on the turn calling $40 there.
No, and you would have made a good play because you'd have gotten it in good at that point with all your money ahead. Instead,
right.
Now you're second guessing, making up stuff to call 74, and it looks bad. This way, you're getting the money in ahead and doing the right thing to put pressure on him. Instead, you put the pressure all on yourself when the heart got there, and you convinced yourself he was bluffing hearts. And if this guy is not that sophisticated, how can you make a sophisticated play like that and then call him on it? It's not right.
Right.
Let's do better.
Oh, well.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I wanted to let you know that I thought that Oprah Winfrey was awesome in The Color Purple. But I forgot. I didn't say it early enough in the show, so I thought I'd wrap it up with that. So she was remarkable in that movie. I'm Chris Cassetta.
And I'm Scott Locke.
See you at the tape.
Anti-Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.